Well, today we're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 11. There are 15 verses. We're only going to do 6 verses. This is the first battle that King Saul is involved in. I'll tell you the end of the story. He wins. Okay? So Saul wins. He's 1-for-1 in battles. Saul, as you learned last week, was hiding in the baggage when the people wanted to acclaim him as king. In chapter 9, you might recall that he was anointed by Saul, and as we learned, he was acclaimed by the people, and in this chapter, he finally is relegated to king. Finally, the stamp of approval by God and the people is upon him. Now, as we begin, we notice that there's something going on in the place called Jabesh-Gilead. And I have a map, and I'm going to show you that in just a moment. But what has happened, there's a group of people called the Ammonites. The Ammonites come from the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible. The word Genesis means the beginning. So in the very beginning, God gives us a book to tell us what happened in the beginning. And in the beginning, Lot was a man who was related to Abraham, whom God chose, which eventually the Messiah came through. But Lot was living in an area called Sodom and Gomorrah. And God judged that area, and Lot escaped with his family. Unfortunately, his wife was disobedient because God said, don't look back. She looked back, and what happened to her? She was turned to a what? Pillar of salt. Thankfully, Lot and his two daughters did not look back. They kept moving, and they went up into the mountains. His two daughters realized that all of the men had died, and they were concerned they would not be able to have children. And so, in a really sad, wicked story, they got their father drunk on 2 consecutive nights. The older daughter had a relationship with her dad, and from her sprang a group of people called the Moabites. On the next night, the younger daughter, also with her older sister, got their father drunk again, and she went in and had a relationship with her dad, just like her sister did the night before. They both became pregnant, but the younger one became pregnant, and her son they called Ben-Ammi. And Ben-Ammi was the father of the Ammonites. Now, the Ammonites are still in existence today. You say, Jerry, this was 3,000 years ago. I know. And I wasn't there. But there is a country today called Jordan. Does anybody know the capital of Jordan? Google it real quick if you don't know it. Anybody want to take a guess? Amman. Amman, Jordan is the capital of Jordan. They are the Ammonites. 3,000 years ago, the Ammonites were fighting with God's people. And guess whom? Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt is still fighting with today. The same people. Same thing. So with that being said, that gives you a little bit historical understanding. We find that Jabesh-Gilead is about 40 miles northeast of where Saul is from. He lives in a place called Gibeah. Nahash, an interesting guy, he's a warlord and he was the leader of the Ammonites. And his name means serpent. How would you like to name your kid Serpent? Right? I mean, if you did that, you could honestly say, when they did something wrong, you were a snake, and that'd be true. But he was named Serpent. So obviously, his parents had something in mind when they named him Serpent, probably some false god they worshipped. I didn't do any in-depth study on his name. And all the men of Jabesh said to Nahash, so he comes to Jabesh-Gilead. That's in the tribe of Manasseh. There are 12 tribes of Israel. And he says to them, I'm going to destroy you. You're going to serve me. Now remember, Israel, at this time, does not really have a standing army. They've just really got a king. I mean, they don't even really have a central government. They're not really in a place to do anything. Saul is not being a leader. I mean, he's not shown really any confidence up to this time. He's kind of been a little scared. He's been hiding. And so this was a great opportunity, if you're going to do something, to do it. And the men of Jabesh said to Nahash, the serpent, make a covenant, make a peace treaty with us, and we'll serve you. We won't serve Jehovah God. We won't serve the king, Saul. We'll serve you. That shows you the weakness of Saul. But Nahash the Ammonite said to them, I will make it with you on this condition. I'll make a treaty with you that I will gouge out the right eye of every one of you. He's talking specifically the males. Thus I will make it a reproach on all Israel. Notice all, look at the screen at the top up way up here. All Israel. He wants to humiliate all 12 tribes, really. And by doing what he was going to do, he was going to send a message that I'm in charge. Now, what is this right eye bit? Well, it's very easy to understand when you understand ancient warfare. In ancient warfare, men were trained to fight with holding a shield in their left hand. In the right hand would be a sword or some other kind of weapon. And so we'll pretend that this clicker is a weapon. So here's my shield, here's my weapon, but if I have my right eye gouged out, how am I going to do? Not real well. Which would make Jabesh Gilead impotent to fight back in the future because all their men would have lost their right eye. And they would have humiliated all of Israel. That's the context. They're in a tough situation, aren't they? They are in a really, really bad situation. Well, I wanted to give you some context. So if you look on the screen, this is the Dead Sea. Sea of Galilee is kind of up here. And then right here, I'll give you two guesses. Is this the Missouri River or the Jordan River? I'll give you three guesses. Mississippi, I'll throw that in too. It's the Jordan River. Jordan River. And the tribes were divided on both sides of the Jordan. Most were over here, but there were a couple, two and a half over here. Manasseh was kind of split between both. But we find that what was going on this side, here are the Ammonites. This is Nahash and his group. And they're up here threatening the people that live on the east side of the Jordan. Now, on the west side of the Jordan, down in here, we have the Philistines. And the Bible tells us just a few verses back that they were here creating problems. So we have the Philistines here, we have the Ammonites here, and Gibeah is whose hometown? I'll give you two choices, Saul or Saul. All right, so, good, very good, Saul. All right, so Saul's hometown. We have garrisons of Philistines around his place. He's doing nothing. And we have the Ammonites ready to gouge out eyes in Jabesh Gilead. Israel's in a bad place. So what's going on here is exactly what's going on today. Nothing has changed. In 1948, right after Israel became a nation, they were attacked by the Middle East. In 1967, they were attacked by the Middle East. 1973, they were attacked by the Middle East. 1000 BC, they're being attacked by the Middle East. Now, when's that going to end, preacher? When Jesus comes. That's it. I know you don't want to hear this. There'll never be peace in the Middle East. Because Islam and Christianity cannot coexist. Because they are two different religions. So therefore, it's going to be an ongoing problem. Well, with that being said, the elders of Jabesh said to, obviously, Nahash, the serpent, hey, give us some time. Give us 7 days. And what we want to do is we want to go around Israel and see if we can get some help to fight you. Now, this is really kind of odd. Why in the world would a warlord like Nahash or the king, whatever they called him, why would he give his enemy 7 days to get an army together? First of all, he knew it could never be done. It's almost as if he's sitting back and laughing and saying, you've got 7 more days, Mark, to have your right eye. Ron, it's coming. Enjoy your 7 days. Kenny, enjoy your 7 days because it's coming. And I imagine they're partying and they're laughing and they're making fun of Israel. And you know what? In their defense, they were right. They were absolutely right. Now, years ago in the book of Judges, in the previous book, we find that Japheth, who was a judge, destroyed the Ammonites. But they'd regroup now many years later, and now they're strong once again. And here they come for round two, and they're coming for revenge. Well, they said, after 7 days, if there's no one to help us, we will come out to you. We'll surrender, gouge our right eyes out, and we will serve you. Nahash said, let's throw a party and laugh the whole week. These guys are crazy, but just let them do what they want. Then the messengers came to Gibeah. Remember who lives in Gibeah? Saul. And spoke these words in the hearing of Saul or the people? The people. So when the messengers go to Saul's hometown, what they should have done is said, we want to speak to the king. Where's the king? But did they? No. That shows you. Think about it. That shows you how impotent Saul was as a leader. No power. No credibility. Non-existent. And what did the people do? They lifted up their voices, they began to cry. Nobody, not even the people, said, let's go get the king. Why would they get Saul? He's not a leader. He's got the title king, but he's not doing anything to help us. Now behold, here's Saul, the king. Now in this chapter, what you're going to find is, which we're not going to get to, I'll just tell you, he becomes the king, finally, that the people can follow. Where is the king? Is he doing kingly duty? No, he's out in the field with the oxen. Here he comes, behind the oxen. Before, he was hiding in the baggage. Now he's out in the field. And he said, what's the matter with the people that they're crying? What's going on? I'm sure some of them may have said, but may not have. They may have thought it. Well, if you weren't so worthless as a king, you'd know. They'd never say it because that'd probably be the last thing they said. So they related to him the words of the men of Japheth, and they told him what was going to happen. That the serpent and his troops were going to destroy the city, that they were going to gouge out the right eyes of all the men, and probably they were going to come for other tribes as well. Because they would have been that strong. All right. From verse 7 through 15 is the rest of the chapter. God supernaturally, using Saul, crushes the Ammonites. And Saul becomes finally crowned the king that he should have been acting like in the previous chapters. So you know the end of the story. But I wanted you to look on the big screen. This verse here is huge. Something happened. What happened, church? Tell me what happened. That's exactly right. There it is. I would submit to you, when the Spirit of God works in your life, things happen. It's not going to come upon you like Samson, where you'll get one jawbone and kill 1,000 men at one time. Can you imagine that? With every chair in here, we can put 800 people, just add a couple hundred up and up street, and stand before them with a jawbone and say, come get me. That probably wouldn't work unless the Spirit of God supernaturally came upon your life. Now, here's what we know. That's not going to happen today. But here's what I do know. The Spirit of God can still come upon you, and God can give you what I would consider supernatural strength in a different way to help you in other areas of your life. Weaknesses, challenges that you face, maybe emotionally or mentally or financially, that the Spirit of God can help you and me to do things that maybe we never thought possible before if we allow the Spirit of God to do it, if we will give in to God. And I want to close this morning with my last 7 minutes with an example of that. That's not one of these Herculean Bible stories where, you know, you get thrown in a pit and all the lions go to sleep. And I don't mean that sarcastically, but I can't relate to that. I've been to the zoo. I'm not going in the cage. I'm not going in even if it's asleep. Because here's what I know. They wake up. Right? I'm not going to try to fight 1,000 people with a bone. So I can't relate to that where I live, but I can relate to what I'm going to show you right now. How many people have heard the name Nikki Cruz? Anybody heard Nikki Cruz? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. All right. We'll round that off to say 15. That was about what it was for every service. Nikki Cruz was born in Puerto Rico. There's Nikki, and there's Nikki. Praying, talking to David Wilkerson, who's passed away, he's with the Lord, was the pastor of Times Square Church, New York City. Great ministry, did a great work for God. Nikki Cruz was born in Puerto Rico, moved to the United States, and moved in with his brother in Brooklyn. His brother's name was Frank. And I want to read his testimony, and I just want this to resonate, and I'm going to let you go. Because once I read this, that's all you need to hear. I want to prove to you today that God can do miraculous things in the lives of people if they'll open up to Jesus. Nikki Cruz is the author of 18 books, including the all-time Christian classic Run, Baby, Run, published in 1968. It's translated into more than 40 languages. He was born, as I said, in Puerto Rico. His parents were unusual. His mother was a witch. His father was a satanic priest. He was the victim of repeated physical abuse and rejection at their hands. Finally, as a teenager, as I said, he went to New York City to live with Frank, his brother. He quickly got caught up in the gang violence that was sweeping the city. He rose to the ranks of the notorious Mama gang in Brooklyn and eventually became the warlord. He's the boss. His life was a downward spiral of violence and dysfunction. A court-ordered psychiatrist told the court, and he told Nikki to his face, he was doomed, finished, on a one-way trip to hell and the electric chair and hell. And the doctor was right, because he was. I read accounts this week, and you're welcome to go online and read about Nikki Cruz, where he admitted to stabbing up to 18 people. Only God knows how many people he may or may not have killed. Whether he admits to that or not, we don't know. One account was when he was a kid, his parents put him in a cage, put birds in, they scratched him, clawed him, and this kind of abuse that he went, imagine. And that's just a snippet. He absolutely experienced zero love as a kid. Zero. One day, a young preacher by the name of David Wilkerson from Pennsylvania came to the war-torn streets of Brooklyn. Initially, Nikki confronted the preacher and said, "I'm going to kill you." That's a good day, isn't it? The preacher looked at him and said this, "Nikki, I'm reading verbatim, you can kill me and cut me into 1,000 pieces and throw them right there on the street, but every piece will cry that Jesus loves you." I got to give Wilkerson credit. I think I'd have ran. And you may have too. This guy was bad. Remembering this confrontation, Nicky said later, Jesus sent him there to bring a message to the gangs. I almost killed him that day because I was full and totally full of hate. That was when he told me that Jesus loved me. A few weeks later, at a rally at an arena in Brooklyn, Nicky gave himself to Christ and exchanged his weapons for a Bible. By the way, he's in his mid-80s now, still alive. For the last 60 or so years, he's been traveling around the world preaching the gospel of Jesus. His life story, you may have heard this, is in a movie and a book entitled The Cross and the Switchblade. That's the story of Nicky Cruz. He continues even today to minister in inner cities, prisons, street corners, and stadiums around the world. The Wall Street Journal described Nicky as the Billy Graham of the streets. So don't tell me that Christ can't break through hard hearts. Don't tell me, oh, Jerry, I know this person, they'll never receive Christ. You're dead wrong. Keep praying. Keep asking God to break through. No one would have ever thought that person. That person would eventually come to Christ. A witch for a mother. You say, well, my mother, she was a witch. No, I mean a real witch. A real one. And his dad was a real satanic priest. And God does the supernatural through the Spirit of God. God, go with us today. Thank you for this illustration of Nicky Cruz, who's still living today and preaching the gospel. Thank you for men like David Wilkerson, who had the boldness to confront him in the words in which he shared. And Lord, help us to be able to deal with our issues. And I believe that can be done through the Spirit of God if we'll allow and open our hearts. Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for the sweet fellowship, the music, the Lord's Supper, the preaching of your word. Go with us today and give us a great week. And all of God's people said, God bless you guys. We'll see you next Sunday.